He's Hacker.
Talk about a fried egg. I lasted about 5 minutes out there. I said, to heck with this. I'll do this in the morning. And I don't have any inside information. The lady that did it, she got in there.
Don't
I
know.
Mean, she made it happen.
And he doesn't shy away from opinion.
And I do enjoy drinking cold beer at ballparks. So if that makes me a baseball fan, then I'm a diehard baseball fan.
It's Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
And a very good Wednesday evening to you, Jacksonville. It is Hacker After Dark, 1010XL, 92.5 FM with Dylan Denmark. The Hacker, Ryan Green, with you. Glad you are with us on a day that, well, I'll quite frankly remember for quite some time. It really started last night, roughly about 10 o'clock, 10:30-ish after I got home from the show. My Orlando Magic just had a heartbreaking loss. Just feel like getting kicked below the belt by a mule last night. That's what that felt. So that started off this last 20 hours just swimmingly for me. Then I wake up this morning and find out Bally Sports is no longer on Comcast Xfinity. So that was an awful lot of fun. I'll certainly get into that here in a moment. But, you know, look, you persevere, right? Things don't always go your way. You just got to shrug off your shoulder and move forward, man. It's not about how much you get hit. It's about how much you can get hit and still move forward, right? How much can you take, in the great words of Rocky Balboa? I can take Bally Sports being knocked off Xfinity. It really fires me up, but I can take it. I can take Orlando just giving me just a gut-wrenching loss in Game 5 last night. Combine that with my wife's beloved Boston Bruins losing in overtime last night at Toronto. So it was not a good night at Casa de Hacker when it comes to the world of sports. But I get to vent into this microphone for the next 2 hours, and I'm certainly looking forward to do that. We're going to talk a lot of Jaguars this evening. We got Mark Long of the Associated Press. He's going to join me in less than 20 minutes. We'll look back on the draft. We'll also give some thoughts on Zay Jones and what the Jaguars roster needs to do now moving forward as we approach OTAs. So Mark Long of the AP, less than 20 minutes away. Also my buddy Jared Bailey of the USA Today, talking Jags, talking AFC South and more. Jared Bailey will come up towards the top of the 9 o'clock hour. But we're absolutely jam-packed. We will keep you updated on the NBA playoffs tonight. A couple of games. Three Western Conference series are already over. Not one Eastern Conference series is over yet, but that's about to change. Boston can close out Miami tonight, and the Celtics have doubled up the heat. It's 32-16 with 2 minutes to go in the first quarter. So we'll keep you updated on that. Later on tonight, pivotal Game 5, Mavericks and the Clippers. That is the only Western Conference series that's still going on. Oklahoma City swept New Orleans. You had Minnesota sweeping Phoenix and Denver dispatching of L.A. So three of the four Western Conference teams have advanced. They're waiting on the winner of Dallas and the Clippers. And in the East, none of the series have ended yet, although Boston can eliminate Miami, and they're up 15 towards the end of the first quarter. Every night here on Hacker After Dark, we do kick it off with a big deal of the night. And Dylan Denmark, let's do that right now.
Time now for the big deal of the night.
What's the big deal?
What is the big deal?
No big deal.
It is a big deal.
On Hacker After Dark.
I probably bring this up about once a year, and I'm always curious. How did you become a fan of the team that you're a fan of, whether it's college or professional? How did it happen? What are the roots? How did it start? For me, it's very simple. Now, I'm an objective broadcast journalist at the age of 40. There was a time before I started in sports radio, and probably after I was on the radio for a little bit, that some would misconceive my thoughts as being that of a Florida Gator fan. Of course not. No, can't be a fan in this line of work. You got to be objective. You got to be a broadcast journalist, Hacker, and that's what I strive to be each and every night on Hacker After Dark. But How did I originally become a Florida Gator fan? Well, it's simple. I was born in Tallahassee in the shadows of Doak S. Campbell Stadium at Tallahassee Memorial Hospital. Lived in the Killarn area, if you're familiar with Tallahassee. But my dad basically gave me no choice. That man hated Florida State University more than life itself. I had a Gator bandana in my crib, 6 months old. And what was I going to do? I was given really no choice in the matter. I was going to wear the orange and blue. I was brainwashed from birth. As far as the Jaguars, well, that's simple. My mom and I moved to Jacksonville when I was 11 years old. It happened to be in June of 1995, the month before the Jaguars played the Hall of Fame game in Canton, Ohio, against the Carolina Panthers. My dad was a Washington Redskins fan. I guess that's the route I would have gone if not for the Jaguars. So that's a simple one. And I bring all that up to say this. With the Orlando Magic, it just goes down to one fateful day in the summer, I guess it was the fall, of 1989. My uncle had season tickets to the inaugural season of the Orlando Magic with the likes of Nick Anderson and Jeff Turner. I don't even think Turner was there yet. He might have been. It was Scott Skiles. I mean, this was the first team. 1989, Reggie Theus was on that team. I don't remember the game all that much, but I remember that, or I was told that I went to a game in 1989, Magic Clippers. I vaguely remember it. I was five, about to turn six. And that's been a curse. And it's been a curse for 35 years. And I got to thinking last night, as again, for the millionth time in the last 3.5 decades, that the Orlando Magic just decided to rip my heart out and just step all over it and losing a game that they had no business losing, and their season will probably end on Friday night. There have been some good times in the last 35 years, but a majority of it has been bad. What if my uncle had taken me to a Boston Celtics game in 1989? What if for some reason we were out in L.A. and went to the Forum to see Showtime and the Lakers in 1989? Why couldn't we have traveled to the Windy City in Chicago to see a young Michael Jordan before he won all his championships in 1989? How much easier would my sports life be? How much easier, how much more gratifying would it be to be a fan of the Celtics, the Lakers, the Bulls, the Bad Boy Pistons of the 80s? I couldn't have gone to any of those games in 1989. No, I had to go down to the Orlando Arena. And I had to watch the Orlando Magic. And from that point forward, 35 years later, I have lived and died with that basketball team. And it just, man, last night sucked. Sucked. I mean, and what's terrible about games like that is the game ends around 10:15. I had to wake up to get Little Hack to school today. I knew I wasn't going to get a lot of sleep anyway. And you just sit there, stare at the ceiling in your bed. And you're just like, my God, man, why am I doing this for 35 years? It never fails. Denmark, I told you last night when I left the show. What did I say?
You said that they would lose on a three.
I said Donovan Mitchell would beat him at the buzzer on a three. Well, okay. He didn't beat him at the buzzer. He beat him with 30 seconds to go. That was the go-ahead basket. It never fails. When you watch a team for 35 years, personnel may change, coaches may change, but as a fan, you just know. And that's why I think when I'm watching the Jaguars, of course, now being the objective broadcast journalist, why I get so much grief on Twitter during Sunday afternoons, and I do. I might get a lot of grief, but let me ask you guys something. When you follow me on social media and I'm going in on the Jags, how many of those games have they ever come back and won? How many of those games have they ever turned the tide and come back and won? As a fan or as a media member that's just been around a team forever, You just have a sense, man. You just know. So that's my whole spiel tonight. I'm just curious. If you want to hit me up on the text line, designed by Lifetime Enclosures, I'd love to hear from you at 641-1010. A, who are you a fan of? And B, why are you a fan? Again, the Gators, my dad gave me no choice. I was 6 months old in orange and blue attire. The Jaguars, I moved to Jacksonville in fifth grade, going into sixth grade, literally a month before the season started in 1995. In Orlando, my uncle took me to a game. And don't get me wrong, I tell my uncle this all the time. He's still with us. He's still going after it. He's still a big Magic fan. Like, why did you have to take me to this place 35 years ago? Because it has been a sports curse. Curse. Think about how easy, like my wife is a prime example. Think about how easy it would be to be a New England sports fan. Heidi's in her early to mid, I'll say early 30s. Love you, sweetie. Early 30s. I won't give out her age. Early 30s. All she knows is winning. Six championships with the New England Patriots. Three of the Boston Red Sox. She wasn't alive for Bill Buckner. That's nine titles between the Sox and the Patriots. Throw in a Celtics title in there. That's 10. And I'm pretty sure the Bruins have won at least one, maybe two in that time frame. She's won a dozen championships. And she's considerably younger than I am. Me? I've never seen a team in the Super Bowl with the Jaguars. The Magic have made the NBA Finals twice in 35 years, and they're 1-8. They got swept in 95, and they lost in 5 in 09 to the Lakers. Now, collegiately, I've had some success, right? Billy Donovan and the college basketball team back in the day, that was cool. Obviously, three titles in football. All of that happened, of course, when I was still a Gator fan, not the journalist I am now. But professionally, it sucks. 35 years, I have one NBA final win. One. Not a series. I have one game in 35 years. Never been to a Super Bowl. Being a Magic and Jaguar fan, ladies and gentlemen, builds character. It builds character. I've been kicked down and beat down so many times by these two organizations, primarily the Magic, that nothing really should bother me anymore, but it still does. I'm still a fan. But you know why I still do it? And I was thinking about this as I was just stewing last night over that loss to Cleveland. Which, by the way, the Magic season isn't even over yet. They still have game six tomorrow. And let me go ahead and tell you. They're not going to win that game. Are you kidding me? Season's over on Friday night. I would be stunned if they won that game. And they're certainly not going to go to Cleveland and win in game seven. But you know why, as I was thinking last night, why I continue to watch this team and go to these games year after year after year, decade after decade after decade? Because when it does happen, when destiny finally does show up, when the planets align and they finally hoist that NBA trophy, maybe in 5 years, maybe in 10 years, maybe in 20 years, but I believe one day it will happen, I can say, you know what, man? I was there all along. I wasn't a bandwagon fan. I didn't jump off the ship. I didn't come on when times were good. I was there when the down times were down, brother. That's what being a sports fan's all about. That's why we love what we do here on 1010XL. That's why you love the sports that you do. I appreciate the platform. Just let me vent a little bit tonight. Because I was PO'd yesterday. And I think venting is therapeutic. But again, the question still stands. I'm a Magic fan because my uncle took me to a game in 1989. End of story. That's why. Why are you a fan of who you are a fan of? Hit me up on the text line. We'll read some of your responses. designed by Lifetime Enclosures, 641-1010. Why are most of you Jaguar fans? Well, probably because you live in Jacksonville, right? It's a good start. Jaguar draft in the rearview mirror. Jaguar free agency all but in the rearview mirror. I saw they hosted a veteran corner from Detroit. I guess yesterday. They could sign a veteran corner. I wouldn't mind that. A veteran edge pass rusher as well. But I like the draft. I like what they've done in the offseason. I'll tell you what I really like. I got a kick out of this. You see the free agent jersey numbers were revealed for the Jaguars? They gave Gabe Davis Calvin Ridley's number. That's hilarious. Calvin Ridley, agent zero, right? Big deal. He was number zero. Well, for 1 year, he's out of here. So you know what? Let's give it to the guy that we hope replaces Calvin Ridley and Gabe Davis. That's your new zero on the team. Obviously, he wasn't getting 13. That's what he was in Buffalo. Christian Kirk has that locked down. So you will see another zero at wide receiver, not Calvin Ridley, but newly acquired Gabe Davis. Boston is absolutely destroying Miami. This series will end tonight. Boston up 49-25, 9 minutes to go in the second quarter. With Dylan Denmark, the Hacker Ryan Green with you, Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us on a Wednesday night edition of Hacker After Dark. Coming up next, into the Jaguars, my buddy Mark Long of the Associated Press will recap the Jaguar draft. We'll take a look at the Zay Jones release, what he meant to the team, what that release means going forward, and speaking of going forward, what do the Jaguars need to do to this roster in the coming weeks to months prior to training camp? Keep in mind, training camp is less than 90 days away now. Training camp will start roughly in that July 25th, July 26th area. So we are inside of 3 months. That's not a long amount of time. What does this roster need to do to get even better prior to training camp starting? Wednesday night, Jacksonville, Florida. Glad you're with us. Hacker After Dark, Mark Long of the Associated Press is coming up next.
Let's ring up another guest on the All-Pro Roofing phone line.
Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguar draft in the rearview mirror. 9 new Jaguars were selected. And, of course, the ramifications of the draft that have come since, including the release of wide receiver Zay Jones. There's a lot to get into. With that, my buddy Mark Long of the Associated Press. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How are you, Hacker?
Mark, we're good. Thank you for the time. And we'll get to the draft class in a moment. But let's begin with Zay Jones. I guess the writing was on the wall after the Brian Thomas draft pick. I know a lot of Jaguar fans were hoping they could figure it out to keep Zay. But ultimately, a money move, wide receiver 4, making that much cash, it wasn't in the cards.
Yeah, and not only that, but, you know, he wasn't available last year, so he missed 8 games with knee and hamstring injuries. He got arrested for the domestic violence. I know that thing was dropped, but you know, still it's about his availability, and makes it very hard to keep a guy paying him $10.8 million, or at least that's his cap number, you know, when he's not available. So I think they were looking to upgrade the position, and they did that with Gabe Davis. Think about it, this go back, you know, he would have been cut a month ago, more than a month ago, a month and a half ago, had they signed Calvin Ridley. The plan was to bring Calvin Ridley back, and they signed Gabe Davis to replace Zay Jones. So the writing's been on the wall for really 6 weeks for Zay Jones, that he was persona non grata and he was the odd man out, and they wanted to move on and upgrade that thing. And drafting Brian Thomas certainly did it. I think bigger than drafting Brian Thomas and signing Gabe Davis was really the fact that they're going to bring in Jarvis Landry. This is a guy, 5-time Pro Bowler, who was out of the league last year. And I think they're looking at him and going, okay, listen, this could absolutely be an upgrade from Zay Jones. Landry's not necessarily a slot guy. I think he's probably more of an outside guy. Maybe he'll probably play some in the slot. But, you know, he's certainly a guy who could replace Zay Jones and maybe even be more productive than Zay, you know, assuming he's fully healthy. And he's going to be at their rookie minicamp next weekend, and we'll see what he's got at 31 years old.
You know, it's interesting you bring that aspect of it up. I hadn't thought about Jarvis Landry. To me, that's an interesting story. But quickly, final thought on Zay. Boy, the fans really liked him. You know, a very short amount of time, he made some great memories here from the Dallas catch, the deep pass from Trevor, the two-point conversion against Baltimore. Certainly the fans really hated to see him go.
Yeah, and rightfully so. He is, by all accounts, a generally nice guy. And we have been in the locker room with him for 2 years. There's not many nicer humans to be around than Zay Jones. Christian Kirk, Evan Engram, Trevor Lawrence, Josh Allen. I mean, there's a long list of them in that locker room. But I've been doing this, Hack, this is my 21st year, I think, covering the Jags. And I'd have to put Zay Jones in terms of just nice human beings, pleasant to be around, enjoyable to talk to, really deep guys. I'd have to put him in the top five. We just don't find that very often in society, let alone in an NFL locker room. So from that standpoint, I think the fans connected with him. He's absolutely real. He is who he wants. He is who he is, and he says what he says. And I think people respect that and enjoy that. So he will be missed, no doubt. He'll get another job. Somebody will take a flyer here on Zay Jones, and he'll go and impress somebody. He's in fantastic shape, always has been. And, you know, he'll go in and interview, and people will fall in love with him, which I think the Jags did when they signed him to that 3-year, $24 million deal in 2022.
Mark Long of the AP. Yeah, we lost two good ones in the locker room from our standpoint, Zay Jones and Rayshon Jenkins. Those guys were always good for a soundbite. They'll be hard to replace as far as that goes. All right, Brian Thomas, the first-round pick. He now goes with Gabe Davis and Christian Kirk. I guess presumably Parker Washington, Devin Duvernay. You mentioned Jarvis Landry. That's an interesting thought. How does the wide receiver room as a whole now shape up with Thomas's arrival and Jones's departure?
Well, it's deeper, right? That's the big thing. What got exposed last year is when with Zay Jones and Christian Kirk both got hurt, that receiving core was exposed. It was Calvin Ridley and honestly, a bunch of scrubs. You know, I don't really know how else to put it. Jamal Agnew was not a receiver. Tim Jones, Parker Washington, Elijah Cook, Seth Williams, not ready. And we saw it. Two of the injuries Trevor Lawrence sustained can be directly related to Parker Washington not doing what he was supposed to do. So you can't live like that. You can't have that mix of a receiving core when you think you've got a franchise quarterback, when you think, you know, you're an 8-3 AFC South dominant team. That's who you think you are. And you got to take into account injuries are part of the game and they're going to happen. So you better have capable backups. This team took a gamble and went really young in the backup department last year and it backfired. So they went out and they've upgraded. They've upgraded with Devin Duvernay over Jamal Agnew in terms of receiver-wise. I don't know if Duvernay is going to be a better returner, but he's certainly a better receiver, more accomplished receiver than Jamal Agnew. Brian Thomas is a huge upgrade from Zay Jones as a starter. They think, well, or you look at it like this, Brian Thomas, they think can be a huge upgrade from Calvin Ridley. Gabe Davis, they think will be an upgrade from Zay Jones. And then I go and I look at, you know, a guy like Jarvis Landry, and I'm okay. Now that's a guy. If you can get him, he played for $3 million 2 years. If you can get him for $3 million, that's a much better salary than what you're paying Zay Jones. And he's obviously, you know, more accomplished. And that's a guy that if you had to throw him in there, you could throw him in there and feel really good about it. Go back a few years. They had the Minnesota guy. What was his name? I can't think of him right now. I'm going to kick myself. But anyway, they Laquon Treadwell.
Great practice
and
player,
had
Mark.
Him. He wasn't a one or a two or even a three. They just had this veteran guy sitting on the bench. But when they threw him out there, the game wasn't too big for him. The moment wasn't too much for him. He wasn't going to blow by defenses. He wasn't going to, you know, kill you over the middle, but he was a guy who would do what you asked him to do when you, if you need him to do it. And so that's what they needed to get back to that. If they're going to bring Parker Washington along, if they're going to bring Elijah Cooks along, that's fine, but you can't do it with those guys being backups. And by the way, I think what you got to look at is see is when you look at what they did with this free agent draft class, they signed 13 undrafted free agents. Well, five of them are receivers. So clearly they're looking for more from this receiving core. And when I look at that five undrafted guys coming in, I think, okay, if I'm Elijah Cooks, if I'm Seth Williams, if I'm Parker Washington, I'm worried about my job because they're coming. They're gonna probably keep one of those guys. And they're all big guys, or most of them are. Cephas is 6'3". Wayne Ruby, 6'1", Joseph Scottes, 6'2", and David White Jr., 6'4". So they brought in some height in there to see what they can get. Maybe they can go find a better version of Elijah Cooks, a better version of Parker Washington. A
couple more from Mark Long of the Associated Press. Mark, they went back to Baton Rouge twice to get Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson on the defensive line. And one thing I'll say about Trent Baalke, and I know he gets a fair share of criticism, I think some of it is unwarranted, but at that postseason press conference that you were at back in, late January, a couple of weeks after the season, you know, at that point everybody's talking about Josh Allen and what the future is there, or Calvin Ridley, what the future is there. But one of the things Baalke said, we need to get bigger, more physical, and tougher on the line of scrimmage. And you look at what they did, free agency, Eric Armstead, Trevis Gibson, Mitch Morse, re-sign Ezra Cleveland, and now in the draft with Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson, Javon Foster, throw in the seventh rounder, Miles Cole. That's eight guys, 280 or bigger, that they're going to plug in on the line of scrimmage on both the O-line and the D-line. From that standpoint, Baalke did exactly what he said he was going to do.
Yeah, and it's Baalke's playbook, right? Like, he still is a firm believer that this is a big man league and you win on the lines of scrimmage, you win in the trenches, you win by being bigger, better, faster than everybody else. So that's what he went out and did. You know, he stuck to his guns and did that. And you go and you look, three of those guys from LSU, clearly they relied on inside linebackers coach Matt House, who spent the last two seasons as LSU's defensive coordinator. They relied on him to get some talent from that LSU team, get them in the building right now. And I would not be surprised if all of those guys, their first four picks, are certainly contributing right out of the gate. And then you look at picks 5, 6, and 7, very much special teams picks. Deontre Prince from Ole Miss, he's going to be a complete gunner right off of the gate. Keelan Robinson's going to be a returner right out of the gate. Cam Little's going to be their starting kicker. And then you look at the very last pick, you mentioned him, you know, 280 pounds, Miles Cole, that's a project. You know, this was not a very deep draft. You got into those later rounds and it was just pick your poison at that point, pick a guy and see how he develops. And so for them, they're taking this guy, they'll probably stash him on the practice squad, stash him somewhere for a couple years and see how he develops. You can't teach size. You can't teach a 7'3" wingspan. So you see what this guy, Miles Cole, maybe can develop into at this level.
Mark, how does Jerrion Jones fit into the corner room with Tyson Campbell, Ronald Darby, and Darnell Savage?
Yeah, I would say he's your nickel corner. I didn't love that pick, to be honest, and I like Jerrion Jones. I liked him at Florida State, but he wasn't good enough at Florida State to be an outside cornerback. And he was very good inside. I think the ESPN stats and info called him – one of the best guys. He didn't have a touchdown in 436 cover snaps over his last 2 years with the Noles. That's impressive. So, you know, I think he got a 33% completion percentage as a targeted defender in FBS, which is, you know, fantastic rate. So he's got some skills, no doubt. I don't know how he's going to how it's going to translate to the next level. I wanted them to get an outside cornerback. I thought Ronald Darby was the weak link in terms of can you depend on him? He's been a journeyman. He hasn't been able to stay healthy very often. So I thought that was where they needed to go. I was expecting them to go there at 17 or trade down and still go there at 23. They didn't. And waiting to the third round, you know, I get it. They still managed to get a guy they think can plug and play right away, can be a that inside cornerback, that nickel cornerback, which is, you know, plays going to play 75-80% of the snaps. But, you know, I just wonder about the long-term viability of the, of this thing. You've signed Ronald Darby. I think he signed a two-year deal. Tyson Campbell's entering his final year of his deal. So you got a huge hole there moving forward long-term. And then what does this do to Darnell Savage and Antonio Johnson? You got Cisco, Johnson, and Savage, all three safeties. One of them, there was talk about one of them playing nickel. Now all of a sudden with Jerrion Jones in, you got to think Jerrion Jones will be the nickel or at least rotate there. So to me, it leaves a lot of doubt as to where everybody's going to play because you've paid or drafted six guys for basically five spots. What somebody's going to be the odd man out. And if it's Jerrion Jones, then you drafted the wrong guy in the third round.
Final moments with Mark Wong of the AP. Mark, as we wrap up, they got money, man. They saved another $5+ million. Releasing Joey Sly and Zay Jones, they already had top five cap money available of any team in the league. You mentioned corner. You know, Xavien Howard, Marshawn Lattimore potentially, Stephon Gilmore. Obviously Band-Aids, right? Not long-term guys, but there's corners out there. There's also rush-ins like Bud Dupree. I mean, we did this song and dance last year where we kept asking, are they going to bring in a veteran? And they never did. I wonder if they learned their lesson last year. Do you foresee them bringing in somebody in the coming weeks?
Yeah, I think a lot of it depends on what Trevor Lawrence's contract looks like. I do think they're getting close to signing Trevor. I don't know how close, but closer than they were a month or two ago. So what is Trevor's contract looks like? How much money is that in year one? What, you know, how low? But if they can get that cap number to be pretty low, then absolutely. And I would say the number one spot they got to go address is that pass rusher. You're not getting it done with Yasir Abdullah unless he's all of a sudden, you know, taking some huge step. It doesn't even look like he's going to be a defensive end if you're switching to a 4-3. Travis Gibson, okay, he's had some moments, but they've been spoiled around here, unbelievably spoiled for 2 years with the availability and durability of Josh Allen and Trayvon Walker. And it would be a real mistake to go in and assume that's going to happen for a third straight year. I think you got to go in and go find yourself an upgrade from DeJuan Smoot. Go find yourself an upgrade from Kalavon Chaisson. They're out there. You're just going to have to pay for them. They didn't do it last year, and it really hurt them. They could not get to the pass rusher outside those top two guys. So they got to go get better right there. That would be my number one spot for sure. Cornerback. If the right guy's there, for sure. But, you know, again, like I said, you've already invested in six guys for five spots. You go sign a veteran to come in and take one. Now, all of a sudden, you've invested in six guys for four spots. That leaves two of them sitting on the pine. And I don't know if they're ready to do that quite yet.
Mark Wong of the Associated Press. Mark, I know you're busy, man. Thank you for the time. We certainly appreciate it. We'll see you out there at OTAs.
Sounds good. Thanks, Hacker.
There you go. Mark Wong of the AP here with us on Hacker After Dark. Appreciate his time with us this evening. And, yeah, look, we did this last year, and I ran it on this last night, and I'll probably rehash it again, you know, if not later on tonight, but certainly later on this week. Do not make that same mistake again. Is Bud Dupree or Carl Lawson going to come in here and be a Pro Bowler? No, they're not. But they're better than the fourth option you have currently on the team. You have money to spend, right? Trayvon Walker and Josh Allen, remarkably, both guys were healthy as they were last year. Can you imagine what this defense, what this pass rush would have looked like had either Walker or Allen, or heaven forbid, both of them have gone down with injury last year? I don't know who was third on the team with sacks, but I think they had like 3.5. You know, Allen had 17.5. Walker had 10. The next guy had 3.5. And you haven't really done anything, right? It's still Allen. It's still Walker. You bring in Travis Gibson. Okay, he had 7 sacks in 2021. in Chicago. He had 3-22 when he was in Tennessee last year and got hurt, didn't do anything. You've still not done anything to address depth at the edge pass rush position. Please don't do that again. Don't make us ask you every press conference you're going to bring in a veteran. And for goodness sakes, Doug Peterson, don't sit up there and say, oh, we think our young guys are going to develop. No. We had to hear that the entire offseason last year, and guess what? They never did. Yasir Abdullah was a healthy scratch for 8 games. Tyler Lacy was a guy. Caleb on Chason, oh my gosh. Oh, it's a contract year for Caleb on Chason. Yeah, that worked out really well. What do you have, 2 sacks? Got to get some help for Allen and Walker, man. You got to. Corner as well. They got a lot of guys, right? But are you okay in the AFC South knowing you got Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Stephon Diggs in Houston? Knowing you got Michael Pittman Jr., Alec Pierce, Anthony Richardson, Jonathan Taylor in Indianapolis, Calvin Ridley and DeAndre Hopkins and Tony Pollard and the fellas in Nashville. Are you all right going out there in 2024 knowing Tyson Campbell and Ronald Darby are your two starting corners with either Darnell Savage or Jerrion Jones as your nickel? I don't know, man. The bad part about it is, again, I like what the Jaguars have done with the roster. I don't want it to seem like I don't like it. I do, but I have concerns. Depth at corner, depth at edge rush. I have concerns about that. There are guys that are available. Are they going to be great players here for 5 years? No, they're not. But if you want to win in 2024, go bring in a Stephon Gilmore. Go kick the tires on a Xavien Howard. Call New Orleans and see what they want for Lattimore. Bring in a Bud Dupree. Bring in a Carl Lawson on the D-line. You got the cash, man. You got a lot of room. You cut Zay Jones. You got $5 million yesterday by cutting Zay Jones and Joey Sly. Take that $5 million. Give out a one-year deal to one of those veterans. That would probably get it done. It's not about them coming in and necessarily doing big things on the stat line. It's about having some insurance. It's about getting some rest and some depth at those positions. More on the Jaguars coming up at the top of the 9 o'clock hour. Jared Bailey of the USA Today later on in the 9 o'clock hour. My buddy Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network as we will look back on NFL Draft Weekend. Boston up 22 on Miami, Game 5, Eastern Conference first round. With a win, the Celtics advance. Miami would be eliminated. That appears it's going to happen, barring a unforeseen circumstance at the TD Garden. Celtics up 22 at the half. Tonight, 10 o'clock, Game 5, Dallas and the Clippers. Series tied 2-2. In the NHL right now, Las Vegas and Dallas are tied at 2 apiece. Did you wake up this morning, flip around your cable provider, go to Bally Sports where you get to watch the Magic or the Rays or the Marlins, your state sports coverage, and you get a big, awful, nice purple sign from our friends at Comcast saying we no longer carry Bally Sports? I don't know whose fault it is, and I don't care. I don't know if that's Bally Sports' fault. I don't know if that's Comcast Xfinity's fault. Fix it and fix it now. And it's not just here. It's like 33 states. I saw Atlanta fans flipping out that they lost Bally Sports Braves coverage. I saw people up in Michigan flipping out that the Detroit Tigers and their Bally Sports provider were no longer carrying them. That's a disaster, man. Absolute disaster. It doesn't necessarily bother me right now, but it's going to bother me immensely in October because that's where the Magic are. They got 5 months to figure this out. Or I got 5 months for people smarter than I am, like Denmark in there, to tell me where I can watch my Orlando Magic. Because if I don't have Bally Sports and that costs me some Magic games next year, you want to talk about one aggravated individual? You're looking at him right here. I'm just had one of those days, man. One of those days, Denmark. This, again, therapeutic to be able to get in here and talk about all my sports problems. All, ironically enough, seem to revolve around the Orlando Magic.
Yeah, you fixed the watching the games through the internet. It's probably not legal to search through some streams, but that's how you can watch.
Yeah, but that even aside, if I have to pay some bucks, I don't care. Would I still have to get the Bally Sports app if it's not back on Xfinity
by
October?
No, you don't have to. You don't have to, no. Right, you can go on some internet stream, and that can give you every game for free.
Okay.
And
I'm sure none of the good folks at JSO are listening, so we're not talking about pirating or anything. So
everybody in the city does it for every UFC fight.
I'll rely on Denmark in there. That's Denmark in there to let me know what those websites are. 641-1010. We're almost at halftime here on Hacker After Dark. We'll take you up till 10 o'clock. We always try to remind you, but in case you've forgotten, I don't know how you could, we stream every night, every show here on 1010XL during the day, including us here on Hacker After Dark. 1010XL Facebook, we're there every night for you. 1010XL YouTube, we're there every night for you. And 1010XL on Twitter/X. You get home, you unwind, you get the children to bed, flip us on either on the app or on the stream, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're there every night, 8 to 10 here on Hacker After Dark. Coming up next, back into the National Football League, a couple of things in the college world as well. And again, Jared Bailey of the USA Today talking Jags and NFL draft fallout. He comes up in less than 20 minutes on a Wednesday evening in the city of Jacksonville. We're glad you're with us right here. It's Hacker After Dark, 1010XL and 92.5 FM.
Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Yes, it is. Glad you're with us. As we mentioned beforehand, streaming on all our social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, YouTube. Of course, the MyBookie Digital Studios. Our digital footprint, our social footprint, really has expanded. Denmark, I remember a world. I'm old enough to remember a world. Tell me if you remember this.
That'd be a no.
Where you and I were the only streaming show on the station.
Yeah, for, what was it, a year?
Yeah, about that. Oh, that's a good idea, right? And then everybody started doing it, which that's the way the world works, man. I love it. Absolutely love it, and we look a lot better at it. They've done a lot of work out of the MyBookie Digital Studio is rocking every night and all during the day, 6 a.m. all the way through 10 p.m. Think about that. I was talking to somebody, allow me to toot the 1010XL horn a little bit here, being the company man that I am. I was, where was I at? I was in Tampa for the Kenny Chesney Show. This was before the lady was smoking a joint next to us at Raymond James Stadium.
On a doobie?
Yeah, this was in the parking lot prior to that lady doing that. And he was talking about their sports radio station down there, and I was telling him about 1010XL. He's like, yeah, man, do you guys local, national? I said, no, we're local. He said, oh, yeah, how many local programs you got? And I started adding them up. I said, well, we're local 16 hours a day. Think about that, 16 hours a day, 6 a.m. to 10 p.m. Let me do my Wolfson math here. 16 times 5, that's at an absolute minimum. That's without weekend programming or any games that we air locally. We're local 80 hours a week on this radio station. There are not a lot of radio stations in this country. Dare I say there may not be any outside of New York and maybe Boston that have 80 hours of local programming every single week on the radio. It's just kudos to management here and everything they've done, certainly as we've been around now as a radio station for 17 years, started in March of 2007, actually early April of 2007. And here we are in May of 2024. So again, thank you to MyBookie Digital Studio. I was thinking about this as well as we get back into the Jaguars, Jared Bailey of the USA Today coming up in less than 10 minutes. And we'll do more of this as the week goes on. Quite a changing of the guard here in Jacksonville. Kalavon Chaisson was here 4 years. He's gone. DeJuan Smoot had been here, 5 or 6 years? He's probably gone. You got Jamal Agnew, Rayshon Jenkins, reach here 3 years. They're gone. Trey Herndon's likely not to be back. He was here for a while. He's gone. A major changing of the guard. Major roster turnover. And we'll do more of that again as we get closer to the season and as we get into the summer months. But we spend so much time talking about the guys that are coming in, the new arrivals, and with good reason. Because they're what's going to help the Jaguars accomplish what we want them to accomplish in 2024 and beyond. But if you really take stock of the guys that are gone, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to cry over any spilled milk for Kalavon Chaisson. All due respect to him. Like, DeJuan Smoot was a great Jaguar. I had a fathers-to-be class where I sat next to DeJuan Smoot. He and I were in the same class as both of our wives were expecting, like, 5.5 years ago. That would be rough if he didn't come back. I'm a big DeJuan Smoot fan, and he's a good football player. A lot of Jaguar fans took the Zay Jones news very rough yesterday, and he was only here for 2 years. So when you change over, you know, 22 guys on the roster, you talk about the new arrivals. You don't necessarily think about the guys that are leaving, but there are a lot of Jaguars that have played a lot of football in Jaguar uniforms that have been shown the door this offseason. The roster is going to look vastly different in training camp in July than how it looked when they left that field in Nashville back on January 7th. Halftime, Hacker After Dark on a Wednesday, 1 hour down, 1 hour to go. Coming up next, Jared Bailey, one of my buddies from the USA Today. Jared's the kind of guy that he'll give you good answers, man. Don't ask his opinion if you don't want a straight answer. Jared doesn't hold a whole lot back. We'll talk Jaguars, we'll talk draft, we'll talk AFC South, and we'll talk big storylines heading out of the draft and heading into OTAs around the league. Jared Bailey of the USA Today next on a Wednesday night in Jacksonville. It's Hacker After Dark. Back here on 1010XL at 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The NFL draft is now in the rearview mirror. The Jaguars had 9 selections overall. 3 of those picks came from Baton Rouge and LSU, including first-round pick wide receiver Brian Thomas. How did the Jaguars do? Let's talk with Jared Bailey of the USA Today. He does a great job covering the National Football League, and Jared's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL. Jared, how you doing?
I'm doing good, man. How are you doing?
Jared, we're good, man. Thank you for the time. I know you're busy right after the draft, so we really appreciate it. All right, let's dive right into the Jaguars. Look, before we break down individual picks, just kind of your thought, a mile-up view of how the Jaguars fared during the NFL draft.
I don't think it was great, but I don't think it was bad. I think it was, you know, a perfectly average draft. You know, they get Brian Thomas, you know, to help Trevor Lawrence in the receiving corps. So, and now you look at their group of receivers. It's Brian Thomas, Gabe Davis, Christian Kirk as, you know, the top three, and you can work with that. I'm intrigued to see how they're going to utilize him and Gabe Davis as vertical threats, with Christian Kirk kind of, you know, being the underneath slot guy. So I think that right now they have a solid three for Trevor Lawrence to distribute the ball to. And then a lot of it, you know, addressing the defensive side of the ball with, you know, the next few picks. That seemed to be their biggest focus. And, you know, rightfully so. The defense wasn't very good last year. So, you know, they addressed a lot of, you know, some defensive line stuff, got a nice piece in the secondary. So, you know, overall, I think it was a fine draft. Nothing that really blew me out of the water, but I think that they, you know, the picks that they used, you know, filled the needs. And, you know, Brian Thomas being kind of the sexy pick and whatnot at receiver, but the rest of them were very much just like, all right, you know, defensive line isn't going to be, you know, very noteworthy, but it's, you know, something that they needed to fill. You know, got some a secondary piece as well on day two. So it was pieces that they needed to add. And like I said, nothing that blew me out of the water, but again, it was a fine draft.
The interesting thing to me at the wide receiver position is, what does this mean for Zay Jones? Because I agree with you. The top three options are going to be in whatever order you want to put them in: Brian Thomas, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis. Zay Jones might be the best wide receiver four in the NFL if they keep him. The problem, Jared, with a 53-man roster and only dressing, what, 45, 46 on game day, normally wide receiver four has to be a special teamer. Zay Jones isn't playing special teams, so that's going to be interesting to see how that works out.
Yeah, and, you know, I mean, that's a relatively okay problem to have, you know, depending on what – usually, you know, it's like receiver, cornerback, those are the, you know, the guys who are, you know, if you're the third or fourth on that depth chart, you'd like to be able to see them, you know, on punt return and kick return. So I'm wondering if they decide to, you know, lean more on corner for that. But yeah, I mean, if you can run four guys deep at receiver and, you know, go, you know, two by two and four wide sets and have four guys that can legitimately, you know, get the ball, that's a good problem to have if you're the Jaguars. So I think that having, you know, Thomas and Kirk, Zay Jones and Gabe Davis, all guys that'll be utilized a little bit differently, from one another, that variation will only help their offense. So I think that's, you know, in terms of the special teams thing, I think that's something that'll get sorted out. But having four, you know, quality receivers, that's a pretty good problem to have.
Jared Bailey of the USA Today. Jared, were you surprised they went wide receiver in round one when both Quinyon Mitchell and Terrion Arnold were there? And even in Arnold's case, they basically passed up on him twice. They traded back to 23. Mitchell was gone. Arnold was still there. And they still went Brian Thomas.
Yes and no. It was an incredibly deep cornerback class. I would say deeper than the receiver class. So, and look, if they really liked Brian Thomas and felt like he can make a difference with Trevor Lawrence on the offense, I get the pick. But at the same time, like, Quinyon Mitchell is my favorite corner in this draft. And, of course, he goes to Philadelphia because why wouldn't he? And, you know, you can say the same thing for a guy like Cooper DeJean, who I think is probably going to be more of a safety at the NFL level, but he also goes to Philadelphia. You mentioned Terry and Arnold. Yeah, there's plenty of guys that they could have had their, you know, their pick of in rounds one and two. Instead, they go with Brian Thomas and then Mason Smith on the defensive line. So in regards to that, I think that they're going to be a team that hits the free agent market post-draft to add some guys on that side of the ball, where and every team will do this, where they'll go into the draft or they'll go into free agency, like the initial wave. You know, if they don't get anybody there, they'll kind of narrow their focus toward the draft, and then whatever they don't address in the draft, then we'll see that second wave of free agency, you know, with teams like, okay, we still need to fix this, let's go get like a one-year band-aid. So I could see them going after a guy like a Stephon Gilmore to be, you know, a one-year stopgap type player on the outside. That wouldn't necessarily surprise me. But yeah, I mean, like I said, if they felt really strongly about Brian Thomas, I'm not surprised necessarily that's the route they went, because receiver was a big need. A
couple of Brian Thomas's teammates are coming with him. You mentioned Mason Smith on the D line. That was the second round pick, and Jordan Jefferson in round four. That's about 650 pounds of LSU defensive tackle coming to Jacksonville. And I go back to what Trent Baalke said at the end of the year, Jarrett. And in today's world, right, people say stuff and we don't often believe them. There's a lot of pessimism about statements. Baalke said, literally said, we need to get stronger, more physical, and tougher on the line of scrimmage. And you look at what they did. Mitch Morse in free agency, Eric Armstead in free agency, Travis Gibson in free agency going into the draft, Mason Smith, Jordan Jefferson, Javon Foster, the tackle from Missouri, even Miles Cole, the seventh-round pick. That's seven guys, 285-plus, that they've added to both lines of scrimmage this offseason.
And I think a lot of that goes back to the fact, like, if you look at most defenses now, like, more often than not, the base defense is being in nickel. And so when the pendulum swings that way for the defense, then it's going to go the other way for the offense, where, okay, you know, if we're going to be in, you know, there's going to be these smaller nickel corners on the field, we're going to counter that and punch back with, you know, heavier personnel and run the ball a little bit more. So I think the Jaguars would like to do that. And I think that just about every team would like to not have to ask their quarterback to, you know, be Superman every week. And that was a big issue with the Jaguars, is that Trevor Lawrence had to do everything. And in the final month of the year, it caught up with them because he was dealing with the calf injury. I think something with his knee, a little bit with his shoulder, his ankle. Like, he was dealing with a ton of stuff and still needed to be the end all be all. So I think that they would like to be able to have a reliable run game. You know, they just picked up Trevor Lawrence's fifth year option and Travis Etienne's fifth year option. So I think that Etienne's going to be more of a focal point in the run game this year to take a little bit of the load off of Trevor Lawrence. And you got to have guys who can, you know, move people and open up lanes for an effective run game. So I think that that was their biggest thing, was at least on offense, was, okay, let's try to find some balance here and not have to have Trevor Lawrence be, you know, Superman every week. We know that he can be Superman, but, you know, having some sort of balance is good. And then on the defensive side of the ball, like, they couldn't, their pass defense was bad, but I think a lot of that was also, you know, they had a little bit of a struggle getting to the quarterback at times and slowing down run games. So trying to find balance on both sides of the ball is never a bad plan. And again, it's not always, you know, the most, you know, attractive of picks, but it's clear that they had a goal in mind. And with the picks that they used, it's, you know, there's a very clear, like, proof of concept that they have.
Couple of more for Jared Bailey of the USA Today with us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Jerry, you mentioned Trevor Lawrence and Travis Etienne, both fifth-year options picked up earlier this week by the Jaguars. Just your thoughts on both guys coming into year four. We'll begin with Trevor, probably not the year three that he wanted. I think injuries, as you mentioned, had a lot to do with that. What is your thought on Lawrence entering 2024?
Yeah, I mean, there's been too much like Trevor Lawrence slander for my liking this offseason. And again, you know, I already pointed it out, he's dealing with a ton of injuries and he was asked to do a lot. So, you know, at one point the Jaguars were the number one seed in the AFC at 8-3 at one point. And then, like I said, you know, Trevor gets hurt. The pass defense was really, really bad down the stretch, where they got eaten alive in back-to-back weeks by Jake Browning and Joe Flacco. So anytime that you're giving up big passing yards to guys like that, no disrespect to Browning or Flacco, but like, they aren't top echelon quarterbacks. But the Jaguars defense made them look like that. So when you're constantly having, you know, to rely on your quarterback and your offense to put up, you know, 28, 30 points that week in, week out, you know, it's not, that's not a recipe for winning. And it eventually caught up with them. And when Lawrence's injuries were added into that fact, it just became a big recipe for disaster at the end of the year. So in terms of Trevor Lawrence, I still think he's easily one of the 10 best quarterbacks in the league, probably like one of the 7 or 8 best quarterbacks in the league. For him, you know, when it comes to these debates on quarterbacks, it doesn't help that CJ Stroud just had a fantastic year. And he's like, you know, the shiny new toy in the room, where everybody, you know, wants to talk about CJ Stroud, but Trevor Lawrence is still fantastic. And, you know, Travis Etienne, you know, if he has, you know, an offensive line in front of him that can open up holes, he's still one of the better dual threat backs in the league. So I think it was smart to pick up both of their options. I would expect a big money extension for Trevor Lawrence. And then we'll see what they decide to do with Travis Etienne. But both of them are fantastic, and both of them are important for the Jaguars' success offensively, especially, you know, 16 under center, who, again, I think that there's been way too much Trevor Lawrence slander this offseason, and I think he's going to shut a lot of people up.
We haven't spoken since Josh Allen got his big money extension here in Jacksonville, one of the highest paid rush ends now in the NFL. Certainly, Jared, after 17 and a half sacks last year, probably a well-deserved contract.
Yeah, I mean, they had to let go of a few guys to get it done. You know, we saw them release a few veterans in the secondary to, you know, make a little bit of cap room. But it was good to see them get that done. Josh Allen, like you said, he's one of the better edge rushers in the league. And, yeah, I think that if you have a guy like that coming off the edge, you pay him. Edge rusher is quickly becoming arguably like the second most important position in football. Like, if you can get an elite one, then you pay him and you hold on to him. And the Jaguars did that. So it was good to see that that the Jaguars front office took care of that. I think that that was priority number one this offseason, was to make sure that Josh Allen got paid. And while there was some, you know, a little bit of a stressful period there where, you know, we didn't know if there was any communication, or we didn't know if it was going to get done, good on them for getting it done. And now they have, you know, the anchor of their defense for the foreseeable future.
Jared Bailey of the USA Today. Jared, as we start to wrap up, the big story here was what the Jaguars did. Obviously the big story nationally, winners, losers from the draft. I guess the loser Atlanta just getting roasted for taking Michael Penix after they gave Cousins all that money. What was your thought on that and other big league topics coming out of the draft?
Yeah, I mean, the Penix thing, I mean, you just said it, and everybody's really said it so far. You just paid Kirk Cousins, you know, the GDP of the city of Atlanta, and you immediately turn around and draft a quarterback at number 8. And, of course, they're trying to defend of like, well, you know, it worked for the Packers and Jordan Love. Well, the difference is Jordan Love was 21 when they drafted him. And if, you know, if everything works out with this Kirk Cousins deal and he makes it to the end of the deal and he plays well, Michael Penix is going to be 28, 29 by the time he takes over. Like, that's not, I just don't see the logic behind that. I felt like this was like 2 years too soon to worry about a succession plan. And now, you know, when you could have done so many different things, you could have just taken like Rome Odunze and just really leaned into your offense being dangerous. You could have taken an edge rusher or a cornerback, or you could have traded down and done one of those things. There were so many smart things that they could have done, and they did precisely none of them. So they're getting roasted, and rightfully so, because that was one of the more head-scratching moves of the draft. I think the Steelers really knocked it out of the park for the second straight year, getting 4 really quality players that all just happened to fall to them. They didn't have to trade up for any of them. You know, they stayed put at 20 and got offensive tackle Troy Fitanu. They stayed put at 51 and got center Zach Frazier. Both of those guys are likely to be day one starters. Roman Wilson, who's going to be their starting slot receiver, fell to them at 84. And then the consensus number one linebacker in the class, Peyton Wilson, who has gotten comps to guys like Luke Kuechly, fell to them at number 98 because people are worried about health issues from the past. But I mean, if you look at Peyton Wilson's productivity over the past 2 years, injuries haven't been a worry. You know, these injury concerns stem back from like 2021, but he played in 11 games in 2022. He played in 12 games in 2023, was the best linebacker in football in 2023. So the Steelers got a dream of a draft. Like, if they had landed 2 of those guys, it would have been a success, but they land all 4 of them without having to move up or down. That's incredible. So they knocked it out of the park. I really liked what the Commanders did, landing both Johnny Newton and Mike Sanderstil. I think Johnny Newton was probably the best defensive tackle in this draft. So he goes to a Dan Quinn defense, and I'm excited to see how Quinn utilizes him. Mike Sanderstil, he's going to be their nickel starter from day one, and he was terrific last year at Michigan. They also drafted tight end Ben Sinnell, so I'm excited to see how they utilize him offensively. I really liked what they did. There's a couple different steals. TJ Tampa fell, and the Ravens took him, and the Ravens are traditionally really good at developing defensive backs, so I think that he'll end up in a really good spot. And the Bengals take a receiver from Alabama, Jermaine Burton, who we can assume will be the heir apparent to T. Higgins next year when he's no longer on the team. But for the time being, now you got 3 really solid receivers. So a lot of good guys ending up in a lot of good situations. But I think the Steelers and Commanders were the 2 drafts that really stuck out to me as like being like, wow, they knocked that out the park.
Hard to believe we're only 3 weeks away from OTAs and less than that till rookie minicamp. By the way, what'd you make of the Jarvis Landry news earlier this week that he's going to participate in Jaguar rookie minicamp? That kind of came out of left field.
Yeah, that was strange. I didn't necessarily have too much of an opinion on it. We'll see where it goes. I guess that is my overall thought on it. I'm not expecting, you know, him to all of a sudden become a world beater, but we'll see.
It's great for guys like me because a Jarvis Landry rookie minicam, it spices things up a little bit here in the city of Jacksonville. Jarrett Bailey of the USA Today. Jarrett, really appreciate your time. Thank you as always. Can't believe I'm saying this, but the next time you and I talk, we'll be closing in on training camp, and that is pretty unreal. This offseason has flown by. Thank you, my friend.
Absolutely, mate. Take care.
This is Hacker After Dark on 1010XL.
Denmark, we're going to get back into the NFL in just a moment. Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network joining us in less than 10 minutes. Quickly, the transfer portal is about to close shop for this cycle. Surprised not more activity at your alma mater at the University of Florida. I don't think they've brought in 1 guy from this cycle of the transfer portal. After the spring game, I thought for sure they'd bring in a player or 2 even, and to this point, nobody.
Yeah, now that you say it, I'm kind of surprised. I kind of forgot about it. I mean, even something from the group of five, there's a lot of talent from the group of five because a lot of kids that came out of high school in the last couple of years couldn't go Power Five because of the scholarship limits from COVID. And a lot of those kids played well, and now they're going Power Five. So yeah, that's kind of surprising, but I guess that's what Billy wants, man.
Yeah, it's interesting. I was thinking about that earlier today. Is the portal's about to close, I think, in the coming days. And they brought in some guys, a lot of guys. The December portal is the big portal. But like Keon Coleman went to Florida State this portal cycle last year. And Florida State hasn't had anybody in this portal cycle. They did all their damage in December as well. It's been relatively quiet with the exception of Coral Gables. Miami has done very well in the portal in the last week or so, bringing in, I think, four or five different players. More on college football, though, as the week goes on. Again, as we've entered the month of May, obviously the biggest college football season of all time will come up 2024. Opening game, Florida State, Georgia Tech in Ireland. I saw some Florida State people were over in Ireland earlier this week getting a lay of the land, getting all the logistics in order for that game in Dublin on Saturday, August the 24th. Back into the Jacksonville Jaguars, back into the draft and the rest of the NFL with Dallas Robinson. He does a terrific job for PFN Pro Football Network. We'll talk Jags, we'll talk AFC South, we'll talk big picture, league-wide, and more next with Dallas Robinson. Wednesday night, Hacker After Dark, and ladies and gentlemen of Jacksonville, Florida, as always, we're glad you are with us. Back here on 1010XL and 92.5 FM in the city of Jacksonville, we are glad you are with us. The Jaguars wrapped up the NFL draft this past weekend in Detroit. They drafted 9 players in total. Brian Thomas started it in round 1. Miles Cole out of Texas Tech ended it in round 7. How did they do? As now all eyes start pointing to rookie minicamp and a surprise, as we found out earlier this week, that apparently veteran wide receiver Jarvis Landry is going to participate in Jaguar rookie minicamp. Let's talk about all of it with Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network. He's always kind enough to join us here on 1010XL in Jacksonville. Dallas, how you doing?
I'm doing great, man. I definitely didn't have Jarvis Landry's pending NFL return kind of on the bingo card for post-draft here, but you know, with the NFL, you can never really guess what's coming around the corner, right?
Yeah, that's wild. I mean, the LSU connection to Jacksonville is insane. We thought it was insane during the draft, and then the Jarvis Landry news happened earlier this week. And we'll see. I mean, quickly, you know, to Jarvis Landry, a guy you're very familiar with. You do a lot of work with the Cincinnati Bengals. Obviously, Landry had a great stint there in Cleveland for a while. 31, he's going to be 32 in November. I don't think there's anything wrong with it, Dallas. You bring him in, you kind of kick the tires and see if there's anything left, right?
No, I don't think there's anything wrong with it. I mean, I'm assuming if he does sign with Jacksonville or any other team that he's going to be somewhere around the league minimum, right? I mean, he didn't play last year in the NFL at all. The year before that, he was with the Saints. He only played 9 games. He had less than 300 yards receiving. So I think any way you look at this, it's a total kind of shot in the dark, a lottery ticket, maybe a guy who's could come in and have a little bit of a leadership value in the locker room. You know, he's a veteran on a wide receiver depth chart that's integrating a first round rookie. Like, there's value there, but from a fit perspective, I mean, I would expect Christian Kirk to spend most of his time in the slot. That's where Jarvis Landry plays exclusively. So from a fit perspective, like on field, I don't necessarily see it, but from a locker room veteran perspective, I think it makes some sense.
All right, Dallas, you mentioned about fits. That's one LSU receiver. Let's talk to one that was drafted in round number 1. Brian Thomas to the Jaguars. They traded back from 17 to 23. Got a future third and a future fourth for Minnesota. Ooh. I thought that was really good value, and they still got Thomas at 23. Your thoughts on the Jaguar first round selection?
Yeah, on the trade, I thought it was great, too. I mean, to get that sort of package for moving back 6 spots, I mean, I think that's a really kind of forward-looking move from Trent Baalke, who doesn't always do that type of thing. So I thought that was really good. And then to get Brian Thomas at 23, I thought was excellent, too. A guy who, I mean, in mock drafts had gone as high as, what, 12, 13, 15 range? To get him closer to the end of the first round, I thought was a real steal. And pretty much fits exactly what the Jaguars were looking for, I think, after – losing Calvin Ridley, the Jaguars really needed somebody else to complement Christian Kirk and Gabe Davis, right? And I think Brian Thomas, most people had pegged him as the perfect option. And he's a guy who averaged 17.3 yards per catch and scored 17 touchdowns in the SEC. I mean, I think there's obviously big upside there. Of course there's downside. He's a guy who I think comes with a riskier profile than the receivers who were drafted earlier. I think we know that. That's what you're going to find at the end of the first round. But in terms of what the Jaguars need, the value you get from a trade down and picking up a prospect of Thomas's value at the end of the first round, I can't say enough good things about it, honestly. I mean, I think it overall was one of my favorite picks, especially when you include the trade, one of my favorite kind of transactions of the first round.
Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network. You know, all the talk about Calvin Ridley leaving, and obviously that talk was warranted, but as the dust has settled here, all of a sudden you look at that Jaguar wide receiver room, Christian Kirk, Gabe Davis, with Brian Thomas. You bring in Devin Duvernay, who is a much more established wide receiver than Jamal Agnew. Agnew was a DB that converted to a wide receiver, and you still got a second-year option in Parker Washington. So all of a sudden, Dallas, that wide receiver room, even minus Calvin Ridley, doesn't look half bad.
Absolutely not, and I think the pieces fit together really well too, right? You've got Christian Kirk, who's going to be that slot guy, who's going to hit the short and intermediate routes. You've got Gabe Davis, who is a good blocker and a good downfield threat. And he was clearly a kind of a targeted piece on day one of free agency for the Jaguars. You add in Brian Thomas as a guy who can go over the top. And then you're right. Zay Jones, I mean, he's absolutely an overqualified wide receiver four at this point, right? Maybe, you know, Evan Ingram too. Let's not forget about him. Travis Etienne. I mean, I think this offense, it's on the upswing. I think there was after free agency, I think clearly there was a little bit of a pessimism on how this attack could look, and it coming off how Trevor Lawrence looked at the end of last year with the injuries, it felt a little bit pessimistic, right? I think this draft, combined with what the Jaguars did in free agency, you can see the possible ascension coming in 2024. We don't know how these pieces are going to work, but you can see how the plan could fit together.
You know, Dallas, we live in a world that is so pessimistic. When people say something, you normally don't take them at their word, but I'll give Trent Baalke credit. A couple of weeks after the season ended, he sat in front of us here in Jacksonville holding a press conference, and he said, look, we got to get bigger, stronger, and more physical on the line of scrimmage. And you look at what the Jaguars did in free agency with Mitch Morse and with Eric Armstead and with Travis Gibson. And now you look in the draft with Mason Smith and Jordan Jefferson and Javon Foster. That is exactly what the Jaguars did. They got big, physical men on the line of scrimmage. Mason Smith in round two, I know that's gotten a lot of talk. He had the knee injury in 2022, right? He did come back in 23, played 12 games. I heard a really interesting comparison to guys like Albert Haynesworth, maybe Jeffrey Simmons because of the knee injury. The Titans took a gamble on Jeffrey Simmons, and it worked. The Commanders and the Titans also took a gamble on Albert Haynesworth. It didn't necessarily work. It'll be interesting to see Mason Smith because when he's on, he can be dominant. The question is when he is on.
And if there was any NFL GM who's going to take a chance on a guy who's got tons of upside but also a lot of injury questions, it's Trent Baalke, right? we know that at this point that he's going to go after those guys. So I don't think that the fit necessarily was an exact surprise. Now, there's not a lot of guys in this draft who are 6'5" and 300 and have the athletic traits that Mason Smith has. Like, from that perspective, I get it. You look at the top 10 interior pass rushers by average annual value in the NFL. They are all early round picks. So Mason Smith isn't a first rounder this year. If he wouldn't have had the injuries, he very well might have been. I think this is the area of the draft where you have to find these guys who can create disruption on the interior, which is becoming more and more and more important in the NFL. Mason Smith was 80th on the consensus board. They drafted him at 48. So clearly he was a target for them early on. They drafted him earlier than they might have had to. We'll see how it works out. I mean, they have Eric Armstead now to replace Foley Fatukazi. I think adding in a guy like Mason Smith is something you can do when you've added Armstead. So that kind of creates the baseline for what this Jaguars defensive line can be. Add a guy like Smith and you just hope, right? You're crossing your fingers that this guy can overcome those injuries, can get back to the level that he was in 2022 and become that kind of playmaker. It's the same thing for Foster and Jefferson, I think, in the mid rounds. Is you're right, they wanted to get more size. an offensive tackle, Anton Harrison is the only offensive tackle the Jaguars have under contract next year. So adding a guy like Foster, I think, was a must. And Jefferson, too, I think was probably an overdraft, about 120 points on the consensus board. But again, there just weren't a ton of these defensive tackle types in this draft. If the Jaguars, that was a position group they really wanted to target, I think they probably had to take these guys maybe a little earlier than the consensus board would have indicated.
Couple more for Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network. Yeah, and to add three LSU guys, you wonder if that might help all of them. Brian Thomas with Mason mm-hmm. Smith and Jordan Jefferson. I believe it's only, I want to say, the seventh or eighth time I read where an NFL team drafted three guys from the same college in the same NFL draft. The cornerback position obviously was a target going in as well. They chose not to go Terrion Arnold or Quinyon Mitchell in round one, Dallas. Instead, they wait till round three. They take Jerrion Jones, a guy we're very familiar with out of Florida State. In the fifth round, you know, you're kind of taking a gamble there. De'Andre Prince out of Ole Miss. We'll see what happens. But clearly, they thought corner was an issue, maybe not as big an issue as we thought, but they spent draft capital in the third and fifth round addressing the corner position.
Yeah, I think cornerback was clearly a need going in. And you know, a lot of people had the Jaguars taking Quinyon Mitchell or Arnold in the first round. So I that was clearly something they were going to try and target. Where I don't know where Jones fits in year one, right? I mean, Darnell Savage is probably going to play nickel corner while Darby's going to start on the outside with Tyson Campbell. So I guess Jones is probably not going to be starting year one unless maybe Savage gets hurt on the interior and he could slide in and start on the nickel. But nothing wrong with adding cornerbacks, right? They also signed Josh Proctor as a college free agent. You're going to have to – any NFL team is going to go through cornerbacks, right? And Ronald Darby is a guy who's dealt with injuries in the past. Arnold Savage is a guy who's dealt with injuries in the past. The Jaguars are probably going to need depth on the back end. And whether that means that Jones plays near one or maybe they go out and add another free agent to add to this mix, I think you're going to have to roll through a lot of these defensive backs, especially when you sign some of these free agents that have injury issues. So adding a guy in the third, adding another one in the fifth, It's probably the technique I would take if I were running a team is to just add in bulk defensive back help in the mid rounds and just, you know, hope that one of these guys turns out.
You mentioned Proctor out of Ohio State. Were you surprised he went undrafted?
To be honest, I don't know a ton about him. I'd have to look and see where he's at in our consensus rankings at PFN and where our draft analyst had him ranking. So I'm not entirely sure. I mean, he played at a big school. I think it's a need that the Jaguars definitely need. I mean, I think Andre Sisco is going to be a free agent, right? Antonio Johnson's a little unproven. I think they needed to add there, but as far as Proctor specifically, I don't know. I don't have much of an opinion on him.
Yeah, it was interesting because that was one of the guys. He was called like a preferred undrafted mm-hmm. free agent where they gave him a little bit of money, maybe more so than most undrafted free agents got. And Jacksonville's done that now a couple of times. They also did it with one of the wide receivers from Texas San Antonio. So we'll see. It's hard for undrafted free agents to make the roster, but we'll see what happens here in Jacksonville. Finally, as we take a league-wide look, you did a lot of three-round mocks leading into the draft, Dallas. Your thoughts, biggest winners, maybe a biggest loser? I know Atlanta got crushed about the Michael Penix draft at number eight there. What was your thought on everything league-wide?
Yeah, I mean, it's not a unique take, but yeah, I thought the Penix selection was just a disaster for the Falcons. I get the idea of finding a quarterback solution, obviously, but I just don't understand how you can take a quarterback at number eight who's older, who has had injury issues, when you've just given Kirk Cousins $90 million in guaranteed money. He's your quarterback for the next 2 years at minimum, so that makes no sense to me. As far as good drafts, I think the Chiefs, I mean, they win the last two Super Bowls, and then they walk away with Xavier Worthy and Kingsley Suamatia in rounds one and two. I thought that was excellent. The Ravens always draft well. It seems like they let the draft just come to them. They never reach. They get Nate Wiggins in round one. I like the Adisa Isaac pick a little bit later. And then the Steelers. Yeah, the Steelers totally revamped their offensive line. Troy Fontenot, Zach Frazier, Mason McCormick. You get Robin Wilson as a vertical slot option for Russell Wilson. I thought that was a really solid draft too. So it seems like the good teams stay good, right? Ravens, Steelers, Chiefs, the teams that know what they're doing in the draft, it seems like they did it again.
Dallas Robinson, Pro Football Network. Dallas, as we begin to wrap up, you do a lot of work with the Cincinnati Bengals. Boy, they had an interesting day leading into the draft. T. Higgins, I guess another trade request, right? He already did it once. And then Trey Hendrickson announces a trade request as well. That got some attention here in Jacksonville, I guess, because of his familiarity with Ryan Nielsen a little bit What's the thought on Hendrickson and T. Higgins and their futures in Cincinnati?
I would say they're 99.9% that both T. Higgins and Trey Hendrickson will be Bengals next year. T. Higgins has already kind of come out and said he's comfortable playing here on the tag in Cincinnati, and I think that will happen. Trey Hendrickson, you know, Zach Taylor, the head coach, already came out and said Trey Hendrickson will be a Cincinnati Bengal next year. It's Trey Hendrickson has you know, look, he's a great player. Should he be making more money? Yes. He's not a top 10 highest paid edge rusher. That's all absolutely true. But he also accepted a one-year extension last year that gave him a little extra money in the near term and gave his contract extension through 2025. So, you know, it's hard for the Bengals. It's like, well, Trey, why did you sign that extension if you wanted to hit the open market this next offseason? I get where both sides are coming from. And unfortunately for Trey, I think it's just going to end up that he's going to have to end up playing out this deal. So I would say both guys are overwhelmingly likely to be on the Bengals roster next year.
Dallas Robinson of PFN. Dallas, final question for Jaguar fans listening tonight. Should they be happy? I know some of your colleagues, not necessarily at PFN, but nationally, have maybe not giving the Jaguars a great grade when it comes to the draft. I think grades are what they are. I don't think you can tell anything until 2 or 3 years after the fact. Everybody's got opinions, and that's fine, and that's what makes the sports world go round. We do it every night here on the radio as well. But what is your thought about the Jags draft and Jaguar fans and how they should be feeling about it?
I'd say like lukewarm. I'd say the first trade down and then to get Thomas at 23, I think, is an absolute home run, right? I have no issues with that at all. And I think that if you would have told Jaguars fans entering round one that you're getting Brian Thomas at 23 and these extra picks, I mean, that alone, I think you'd be happy. I do think that they probably overdrafted a couple of their mid-round picks, so that's going to ding you a little bit. But they definitely targeted positions of need. They targeted prospects from big schools, which we thought they would. Overall, I don't have a huge issue with the process. And that's really all we can grade at this point, right? No one really knows how these prospects will turn out. So as long as we think these teams are having a solid process, which I think for the most part the Jags did, especially early on, then I'd give them a decently good grade. I'd probably say a B or a B plus for the Jaguars overall.
Dallas, always enjoy the conversation. You've joined us a handful of times leading up to the draft, man. Thank you as always. Football's right around the corner. I have no doubt we'll be dialing your phone again as we approach the fall. Thank you, my friend.
Anytime, sir. Thank you.
And thank you to Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network for joining us tonight here on Hacker After Dark, as we've brought you a lot of reaction to what the Jaguars did in the draft, and we will continue to bring you reaction probably towards the end of next week and maybe the beginning of next week, and it's kind of a mixed bag. I think some people are very high on some of the picks that the Jaguars made. I think some people obviously are very low on some of the picks the Jags made. The way I interpret things, the draft has been received a lot more favorably here locally than it has been nationally. If you look at some of the national pundits out there, Jacksonville ranks anywhere from the high to mid, even low 20s from 1 to 32. I don't agree with that assessment. I think you drafted guys like Brian Thomas, Mason Smith, Jerrion Jones, Jordan Jefferson. All of these guys are going to play, and to me, play a big role on the 2024 Jaguars. And then we'll see about a Javon Foster. We'll see about a DeAndre Prince or a Keelan Robinson or a Miles Cole. And, you know, Cam Little, after they cut Joey Sly yesterday, Cam Little is going to be your kicker unless something very odd happens in the mini camps and training camps coming up. So I think the draft overall, would I give it an A+? No. Would I get it a D or an F or anything like that? Of course not. Again, I said this last night. I don't like doing letter grades necessarily. I do them because everybody in the media seemingly does them at this point to assess draft classes. But how you can rate or rank a draft mere hours after it happens, to me, is pretty much nonsense. I mean, you really won't know until 2 or 3 years down the road. Now, you might have a pretty good idea after year number one. I think we have a pretty good idea that last year was not a great rookie campaign for Brenton Strange or Tank Bigsby or Tyler Lacy or Yasir Abdullah. I mean, there are issues there. Now, hopefully those issues can be corrected in year number two. But you can't say a draft class is a bust or this guy is a bust after 1 year or maybe even 2 years. I think at year three, you really know at that point that there are probably issues that you need to address. So again, ranking a class 3 or 4 days after it was drafted in late April or early May, that's just what people do. I understand why they do it for their line of work, but again, I don't think it means that much. Talk to me next year, and talk to me definitely in 24 months, and I'll be able to give you a much better indication of how the 2024 Jaguar draft class did ultimately turn out. Well, that'll just about do it. It has been a very busy Wednesday night, and really every night here this week has been very busy and will be as we continue through the week here on Hacker After Dark. We have a ton of people to thank for tonight's broadcast. Again, Dallas Robinson of Pro Football Network. You guys know I love PFN. That is definitely a website that I go to pretty frequently, and we always appreciate Dallas taking time out for us here on Hacker After Dark. Thank you to Jared Bailey of the USA Today, not only talking Jaguars, but talking big picture storylines, AFC South, and more. Again, the Jaguars are certainly what we have focused on this week, but Michael Penix to Atlanta was a big topic of conversation, particularly after they gave Kirk Cousins that gigantic contract just a mere 7 or 8 weeks ago. Some of the big winners in the draft, Jared alluded to Pittsburgh. I agree with that. I mean, you look at what Pittsburgh did, getting Fontenot, the big offensive lineman from Washington that we talked about here, getting Zach Frazier, a center from West Virginia, getting Mason McCormick, a guy that I loved from South Dakota State, you know, getting Peyton Wilson, the linebacker from NC State. I think Pittsburgh had a very, very good draft. So we appreciate Jared taking time out for us this evening. And back in hour number one, my buddy Mark Long of the Associated Press, as we not only talk Jaguar draft and what they maybe need to do next, we kind of said a goodbye to Zay Jones. I saw the Jaguar social media account thanked Zay Jones earlier today. Again, Zay Jones released by the organization yesterday after, of course, they drafted Brian Thomas in round number one. Zay wasn't here very long, but he made a nice impact on the team, on the city, and certainly on the fan base. There's no doubt Zay Jones was kind of a fan favorite here in Jacksonville. I know Little Hack, my son, did not take the news well that Zay Jones was released yesterday by the Jaguars, but at 29 years of age, I have no doubt Zay Jones will find a job very, very soon. We will be back tomorrow night on a Thursday, and we will do it all over again here on Hacker After Dark, beginning at 8 o'clock. Dylan Denmark was your producer tonight. Dylan, great job as always. I'm the Hacker, Ryan Green. And again, Jacksonville, thank you for spending part of your Wednesday evening with us right here on Hacker After Dark on 1010XL and on 92.5 FM. So for all of us here on HAD, have an absolutely terrific remainder of your Wednesday evening, and we will talk to you again tomorrow night on a Thursday, beginning at 8 o'clock. Until then, good night, Jacksonville.